Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna, and welcome to an hour of mind power. We're going to be having a guest, Jennifer Buwani, in a few minutes. We're going to be calling her and chatting with her. We're going to be talking about her wonderful book, Tyler and His Solve-O-Matic Machine. Now, one of the reasons that I was so intrigued with Jennifer's material is that it's oriented towards children, helping them understand business. And that's what we are going to be discussing. And there are so many times in today's world that we don't pay attention to the fact that our kids are going to have to grow up and be a part of the working world. And not everyone is going to want to be an entrepreneur. I mean, we all are different in our particular desires of what we want to do and what we want to attain. But understanding how to work with money, understanding what business is all about, is so very important. One of the things that has given me a lot of concern in the last few years is that so much of what is promoted is like instantaneous gratification. We're supposed to have everything just pop into place and things are supposed to be absolutely perfect. You just wave a magic wand and things happen. Life isn't that way. And if you talk with anyone that has had a business of their own or has worked with someone that is trying to establish a business, you'll find that it's taken them years to acquire the levels of understanding that they have. And usually, if they have been successful at a fairly young age, they've had some very good mentors. So I'm really looking forward to having Jennifer, and she'll be coming on, maybe about 10 minutes past the hour. But before we do that, I wanted to, because it's going to be a while before we're going to be having her on the air, there is so much about history that we have found is not true. Why? Well, one of the reasons is that we have more resources to be able to check information with. Have you ever watched a program on television called History's Detectives? It is fascinating how these people will take an item that someone has had maybe in their family, and they go, gee whiz, I don't know, did this coin actually come from XYZ ship? Or my family said, this is what happened. We've had this pair of pistols in the family for so many generations. Is this story true? And there are these people that will go and do research. It's sort of like investigating, you know, your family history. So when you do this, how much of what you have learned is myth? How much of it is actually true? Well, I came across some information that I thought was really fascinating because when it comes down to getting the facts about history, about various things, how do you know what is right and how do you know what isn't right? Well, usually it's because of records that have been kept, because so often when history is written, it's been written by people many times that wanted to manipulate the facts so that everything would sound super cool and super magnificent or very heroic or whatever without giving the gory details. And many times what brings facts out, I think facts about, you know, Mrs. Lincoln's life, has just been amazing. I've done interviews on various forms of detail that have come forth because there was a box of letters that were discovered. Well, it is really interesting how we'll buy in maybe to certain theories or applications or myths because we feel that, gee, it sounds right, it feels right. However, let me tell you about one that I was intrigued with, and it was an education for me. Have you ever heard the statement that purportedly was said by P.T. Barnum, there's a sucker born every minute? Well, guess what? It wasn't P.T. Barnum that said that. Mm-mm. Apparently, in 1868, there was a man named George Hull of Binghamton, New York. And what he did, he got a slab of gypsum, and he had this carved in the shape of a very, very, very large human being. And then he had someone do some special stuff to it so that it looked like an ossified corpse. And he buried it out on a farm near Cardiff, New York. A year later, guess what happened? Yes, it was a discovery, an artifact. The owner of the farm engaged some friends to dig a well. Well, of course, everybody picked up the story of this Cardiff giant. And thousands and thousands of people went out to see this incredible item. Now, what Hull did, he sold part ownership to a group of investors led by a man named Hannum, who moved this fake giant to Syracuse, New York. Guess what he did? He doubled the admission fee, and I think our guest is going to be with us. I'll tell you more about P.T. Barnum afterwards. Jennifer, I want to welcome you to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, now, ladies and gentlemen, my guest is Jennifer Bulani, and we're talking about her book today, as I mentioned to you earlier, Tyler and His Solve-O-Matic Machine. Now, Jennifer, right at the very top of the book, it says Future Business Leaders Series. Jennifer, you're in Atlanta, Georgia. Why did you decide you needed to write a book for kids about business? A lot of people would say, isn't that a waste of time? I mean, why? Why do we want to teach children about business at a younger age? Why did you decide you wanted to write this wonderful story?
Well, it happened, I would say, probably in 2004, about the time my daughter was born, so I'm beginning to think like a mom now, and I was also experiencing at work a lot of friends that went to college, had great degrees, some of their jobs were being overlooked and being outsourced,
mm-hmm.
and so I had this whole kind of dark cloud of globalization coming down, like what does that mean for our future, first my daughter's future, and, you know, what will she have to be? What will her skill set have to be when she grows up? I started thinking about that. And mm-hmm. because I thought about my education, which is very much about, you know, you go and you get trained for one kind of job and you stick with that job and you're specialized. But when you see what's going on with technology and changing so fast, I really felt like I could tell that her education would have to be much more sophisticated, more entrepreneurial, and that she'll probably have many careers over her lifetime, not just one. She'll have to be able to change with the times and have to be able to be on the ball. So I went looking for something that I could collect over time. So when she grew up and I could give it to her, but I couldn't find anything. So I decided maybe that would be a good thing to write because I can't find it in the market.
Now when you pick this, and I agree with you, I think that for the young people of today, their world is going to be very, very different. And the environment of education is having a tough time adapting to the shifts that are evolving. I was on the phone to someone just before the show who is involved in manufacturing, and they said the United States at one time was the leading manufacturer of so many products throughout the world. And today, it's been outsourced to China, to Vietnam, you know, to various places around the globe. And that is something that this person said they didn't see coming back to the United States. And I thought, you know, we really need to be educating our younger people about the opportunities that are available for them. Now, Tyler, in the book, is a young man who is embarking on a journey. Now, I think this is also something that when a parent is sharing this book with their youngster in the family, it really is significant because it allows the parent to be able to relate to the child in a way of easy communication. I want you to know I've recommended your book to a little girl in our neighborhood who had just set up a lemonade stand this past weekend. And I didn't think kids did that anymore. She had her little table out there. She must have been about 7 or 8 years of age. And she had a friend, a mature friend, a young adult that was sitting with her. And here she had these cardboard, pieces of cardboard in her lap. And it said, and I thought, what are they doing? They were sitting in chairs because her home is on a corner. So they were sitting at the point of the corner. And I thought, what is this? And I got closer. It was very hard to read what she had written on the cardboard. When I got closer, then it said, lemonade, 25 cents a glass. And I'm looking around. I didn't see a table around him. And just short distance away, I noticed there's a table with glasses and a pitcher of lemonade. And my first thought was, this is a young entrepreneur here. You don't know how it's going to turn out as an adult. But I was amazed
that
kids are still doing that.
That's how it all gets started with those lemonade stands. And that's actually the age group for the book, that 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old age. You know, they're perfect. They're such a creative age. They just think outside the box. They're not bound by the rules and the culture that the adults are bound by. And so they can think of new ideas. But what they don't have is the business language. And that's what I tried to put into Tyler and the Solve-O-Matic Machine, is to take this kid through the process of creating a business in a fun adventure story, so they don't even realize that they're learning business. But in the end, what it gives the parents and gives the kids is a common language of just basic business concepts. You know, what is a product? What is marketing? What does it mean to create a logo? What does it mean to listen to your customers? Those sort of things are things that any kid that can run a lemonade stand can understand. You just have to give them the language.
Well, I think it's terrific. Let's talk about Tyler. Who did you base Tyler on?
Tyler, I just made him up in my head. I didn't really base him on anybody I knew. He was just a kid that I thought represented something that the kids could relate to. He's 10 years old, just like the readers, close to the reader's age, and all the kids that he interacts with are kids his age. And so I wanted the kids to be able to imagine themselves in this world and how they could be a part of it. What are their gifts and their talents, and how would they fit in to the city of Nessebus?
Now, Nessebus, that's an interesting name for a city. Where did you come up with that?
Oh, it's just a rearrangement of the word business.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's another angle. A kid could, you know, you could introduce the kid to that. So that is just a wonderful way. Now, Tyler has a friend named Jake. And he and Jake are good buddies. And the story starts off with a wishbone. And he and Jake are really wishing for something. But Tyler had no idea the journey that he was going to embark upon. And
that's
in the city of Nessebus, there was also a place called Sunrise Beach. Now, he's in an orphanage.
Yeah, it was important that I put him in an orphanage because the whole essence of the story is it doesn't matter where you come from, what your background is, what economically, racial, whatever, doesn't matter, because what when it comes to having the entrepreneurial spirit, it comes from within. It comes from your strength within that you can build on. And if you're just given the tools that you need, the language, the understand the concepts, that you can do it yourself if you have the drive. And that was what I really wanted to instill in kids, is a passion for business and that they and a can-do sense.
I agree with that. I think it's so important in a world that basically has been indoctrinated that everything is a snap your fingers and you've got it. It doesn't work that way. It's a process.
That's right.
Now, there may be some exceptions. Somebody could call in and say, Donna, you don't know what you're talking about. I did X, Y, Z, and I made $1 million in 15 minutes. You don't know what
you're talking
about.
But they are definitely exceptions. And that's one thing we got out of the focus group. The kids pick up that it's very rewarding to be an entrepreneur, but it's hard work. It's a lot of hard work. And they picked up on that, but they still, you know, went on to go and try it themselves.
Now, you also bring in the fact that Tyler has this dream of wanting a boat and wanting to go around the world, see different cultures. And I really like that approach because we have so many. That's one of the things that I think is beautiful about the United States. We have so many cultures. We have so many people from different parts of the world that have different perspectives and understandings that we can all learn something from. And I think that that's part of what is given as the message in the book, is that there are many things to learn, and you don't close your mind to different perspectives. You look and say, what is it out there? Let me ask you a question. You've written this children's book, but how much involvement have you had in business? Why is it that, and I know you mentioned your daughter growing up and these perspectives, but what did you draw upon on your own experience to pass along in this book?
That's a great question. I started out as a consultant. I was in computer engineering and did a lot of software development. So the analogy that I kept, the part of my experience that I kept drawing on was the actual production of software and that process that you go through. But then I wanted to make it more generic and more fit the general population. So I changed his deal to something that was more abstract. It was a homework machine that helped him do his homework faster and a manufacturing scenario, because I thought that was a good basis. And then if you, I don't know if you've read the second book, but the little girl, Giselle, who helps him in the first book, she helps him. His sales start to flail, and he begins to need help with marketing and branding and that sort of thing. So then she develops a service business based off of the experience that she has with him. So I was really kind of drawing on, I went from software development into marketing and communications, and so I was drawing on the own experiences that I had that I knew well. And I just also drew on reading business magazines and, you know, Harvard Business Review, and just what are the CEOs saying about strategy and things, and trying to extract from that what are the basic core lessons that I see underlying across all of this. What is fundamental, because that's where the messages are, and then you just kind of turn them into something fun for the kids, an adventure.
I think we underestimate our children. I really do. I think that little ones. This morning, we walk our Scottish Terriers every day, and of course, the weather finally here in the Pacific Northwest, we're drying out, and people are out and about, and I met 2 3-year-olds, and they were very articulate. This is something I've experienced in the past. Very intelligent, very aware, and just very alert, and they were holding pretty good conversations with us, and I thought, we do not understand how intelligent and how articulate children can be. And that maybe their mouth muscles don't work very well. That doesn't, you know, don't worry about that. By the time they're 5, they catch up very nicely. But the thing is that they're soaking up everything. They are very aware. They remember the numbers. They remember details. And I was really amazed at these two little boys, and I looked at them and I thought, wow, here are these kids with an apparent, and they're holding conversation, they want to communicate, they're talking. And when you haven't been around little ones like that, you forget how articulate they can be.
And you look at some of the successful entrepreneurs throughout the history of, you know, the United States, or even before that, and you see time and again, a lot of them, especially before we got into our structured school system, compulsory school system that we have, the kids were doing business. They were apprentices, and they were starting their own businesses at 12 years old sometimes. These were, and there was a lot more freedom, less structure, but they could do it. when the society was actually open to that. But now it seems like we're more closed to going to school. Obviously, school's wonderful, but it just seems like somehow along that way we lost tailoring the entrepreneurial spirit. I don't know exactly why, but I think it's imperative that we get it back.
Well, I think it has. First of all, everybody's become, in my view, so safety conscious. They don't even. I think here, I just am astonished when parents will say, "Oh no, my child cannot do a lawnmower." Well, my goodness, when I was 8 years old, I was mowing the lawn, for heaven's sakes. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't. But it's almost as if no, they shouldn't work at that age. That's not fair. Baloney. You've mm-hmm. got to train them so that when they're out in the world, they're going to need to know how to manage money, and they
mm-hmm.
need to know how to be responsible. And I think of a young woman that I knew that was kept so isolated that when she graduated from high school, she honestly didn't have a clue about
mm-hmm.
how to do anything. She'd go to work, okay, what am I supposed to do now? And the people on the job would think, excuse me, but don't you realize this is what you have to do? No. And she wasn't stupid. She had just been kept so isolated, she didn't have a clue.
That's right. There's a big difference between teaching people concepts, giving them exercises, and then just making, you know, child labor, where they don't
mm-hmm.
have any way to be educated. So there's a balance between that, for sure.
Oh, yes. I think that, again, we've lost a lot of that, and I think that once they are capable of doing things, when you give them responsibilities and hold them accountable for those responsibilities, then they go through the lessons of failure. And that's something that you bring out in your book, too. I think
mm-hmm.
that there is a paradigm of thinking children should not fail. That's not good for them. That's a bunch of baloney. How are they going to be able to function as adults if they don't have those mistakes? It's better for
That's
them
right.
to have those mistakes when they're in a supportive environment than not.
That's right. And then, yes, that's definitely a point where Tyler almost gives up
mm-hmm.
in part of the story, where he almost says, I can't do it. This is too hard. And he almost walks away, but he had the Sote and he had Giselle there to support him. And in the end, he had himself. He couldn't face, you know, he couldn't face not going through and knowing, living with what could have been. He wanted to see it through. And I think that's so many times successful entrepreneurs, how many times have they failed and started back again, picked themselves up by their boots again, and failed and picked themselves up by their boots. That's part of it, but that's what it takes.
If you think of Walt Disney, he failed. So what was it? He went into bankruptcy 7 to 10 times. And when you hear that about, you know, you look at Disney Studios and all of this, but Walt Disney many, many times hit bottom. And he just had such a passion for what he did and was very innovative, and that passion fired up the belief on the part of other people. And I don't care what generation you have. Every generation is going to face that on one level or another. Every single generation. None are exempt. And I think it's important to know those stories. You have a section in your book where Giselle and Tyler, there's these riddles that Tyler has to go through, which I think is very good because Tyler is learning how to think. Tyler is learning how to evaluate. Tyler is learning how to take chances. And Giselle is that female side that, like you said, is very encouraging and, oh, you've got to do it. But there's sesame seeds mentioned in this story falling from hamburger buns on the ceiling. And they're the sesame seeds of doubt. And I thought, that is so clever. Kids would really, really relate to that. They would really, you know, that is something in their mind they could totally see. Now,
yeah, just
you,
being overwhelmed by the sesame seeds. I just thought it was quirky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of like you have with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, just all kinds of quirky things. But kids love that.
Sure, and it's fun when the adults are reading it because there's what it is with kids. They relate to the visual of the words used. And so
mm-hmm.
they know about the hamburger buns. They know about the sesame seeds and all that kind of thing. So it just, you do such a wonderful, wonderful job. But you've got all kinds of information about a Solve-O-Matic machine and what it's going to take. And you've got pirate parrots in here that I think are fun. And then you have got a monkey that does all kinds of mischievous things. And, of course, the monkey.
Yeah.
But what I like is that you don't talk down to the kids in the book. You really don't. You encourage them to be involved in the story as one would be reading it. And I think that's terrific.
Well, that was, I made some of the advisors to Tyler animals, and I wanted them not to talk down, just to advise him, but ultimately it was his decision, because to me that was the core of translating to the kids how much being a business owner is about empowering themselves and about giving them what they need to be able to make their way in the world and to make their dreams come true. And so it couldn't be, you can't teach that. It doesn't come down from, some some scholar somewhere. It actually has to be learned within. And so that's why I wrote it in that manner.
You also have a good section in here on loans. Now, someone would say, well, what would a kid want to know about loans? Well, again, that's part of dealing with money. But you have Amphibian Island, and he has to go to more than one island, and I really like this one section where there was the island where there were sharks, and I thought that's appropriate.
They call them
Guido in the adult world.
Play on loan sharks. Yeah, so there were definite. He was looking for land to build his plant on, and so I wanted him to think through some of the basic things that when you're looking for real estate, what are some of those things that you have got to worry about? So easements was one of them, and I think being zoned for the right area. So it's whether it's housing versus commercial. Residential versus commercial. So those are just the ways that I was introducing the concept. So you notice when I get to the part about getting a loan to buy the land, I don't get into the numbers, not at this stage. It's too early. It's just about the concept that you actually do have to go and you can borrow money for the land. But then later on you get into, in book two, about how he has to make sure that his revenue and is more than his expenses. So the whole concept was just to introduce it first, get them passionate about it before we start introducing some of the more complicated math pieces.
Well, your United Termitians and all of the other critters.
Termitians, yes.
Termitians. Okay. I said Termitians, but Termitians. All right.
Yeah.
Sounds a little bit outer space, but really, Jennifer, you do a great job in relating information. And actually, I think, for young adults, although this is more for, I would say, like you said, for the 7 to 11 group, I think that it's a great way to introduce a young person to a way of thinking so that they understand the mechanics of what goes on behind a business. And it's just not opening up a door and saying, hi, come on in and buy what I've got. It's more than that. There's a lot that goes behind it. So I really think you've done a wonderful job. How many books do you have out total? I just have the one, Tyler and his Solve-O-Matic Machine.
So, yeah, there's two that's been published. The second one is Tyler Passes the Golden Key. And then I'm about two-thirds through writing the third book, which takes Wyatt. I don't know if you remember Wyatt from Chapter 4, but he'll become the... Everyone has a different kid of Nesibus that's the main character, but all the kids kind of end up showing up in each story.
Well, I think it's a great series. You'll need to keep me up to date with your other publications.
Thank you.
Because I think it's a great series. And again, my guest is Jennifer Vuane. Jennifer, what's your website? So if people have kids and they would like to find out more about this, they can check it out, because I think you've got a wonderful series here.
I've got, the website is Booge Publishing. That's Bouje. Publishing.com. Also, if you go to Amazon, you search Tyler and the Solve-O-Matic Machine, or Tyler Passes the Golden Key, or search Jennifer Bulani. You can find the books on quickly there, too. So, and we also have on our website videos of kids who've read the book, their testimonies. We have resources, entrepreneur resources, if you want to, you know, look at other places. Once the kids have read the books, now they're talking, they're wanting to start their own business. There's links to organizations that have programs for that. So definitely check that out, booshpublishing.com.
Well, that is terrific. This is Donna Siebel. My guest has been Jennifer Bulani. Tyler and his Solve-O-Matic machine. Go to their website, Bougie Publishing, that's B like boy, O-U, J like Jackson, E, publishing.com. You'll find all kinds of information. If you know of a teacher that would like to have some wonderful resources to work with kids, this is a wonderful site to check out. Jennifer, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you.
This is Donna Siebel. We are taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a minute. Tyler and his Solve-O-Matic machine. Young entrepreneurs, good stuff to start them off with. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Our telephone lines are now open. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number that you can call, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Again, 888-815-9756. Also, I want to remind you that I am going to be doing an interview in Nashville, Tennessee on the 27th of June, which is a Sunday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. I'm going to be on the air with Denise Barnes. She's the host of a talk show, Differences, and that's at the station WVOL1470.com. So you can go. You can listen to the interview live if you like, and I, again, will be on the air with her at 3:30 Pacific Time, 5:30 Nashville. This is the station that Oprah Winfrey was on for a number of years, so that is their call to fame. Also, if you have a paranormal story, don't forget, I'm putting together the book where we're collecting 100 stories of personal experiences that people have had. So I would love to have your particular paranormal experience, whether it's seeing a ghost or if you've had out of body, whatever it might be, I'd love to hear your story. So send it to me, Donna at DelphiInternational.com. We've got a file set up. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And in the subject line, when you send it via email, put down story for Donna's book or something like that so that I'll identify it. And be sure to put your contact information with it as well. And again, telephone number to call in too if you'd like to chat with me. It's 888-815-9756. Now tomorrow we're going to be talking with Dr. Richard Baird about happiness genes. Have you got them? You bet. We're going to be learning about some research information regarding well-being and happiness. Do some people have it and some people don't? Well, we'll find out tomorrow with Dr. Baird. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with a Dr. Berkson out of New Mexico. This is a man who is a research scientist as well as a medical doctor. And this is about a nutrient. Maybe you've heard about it, ALA. It's alpha lipoic breakthrough or alpha lipoic acid. His book is The Alpha Lipoic Breakthrough. I think you'll find it interesting. Very good information. And then we're going to be talking with Bob Newman on Thursday. Are you ready for college? Oh, my goodness. I'm just amazed. I don't know how families are going to be able to pay for college education. So this is some really good information. And then Bill Nolan, a world-famous author and a man that has done screen scripts, and his background is amazing. He's won all kinds of awards for his work. In fact, he is the man that wrote what is called a cult classic today, Logan's Run. It came out, when was it? I don't remember. What, in the 60s, something like that? Well, we're going to be having Bill on Friday, and his book that he's come out with is called The Bleeding Edge. So if you're into science fiction, that type of thing, I think you're going to find this book quite interesting. It is really unique and very, very different. Well, I had said I was going to finish a story about P.T. Barnum. Before Jennifer came on the air with us, I was telling you how there was a myth, and it has been perpetuated, that P.T. Barnum said there's a sucker born every minute. Well, as it turns out, when they researched this, P.T. Barnum did not say that, not at all. It apparently originated with a man called Hannum and Hall. Well, actually, two men, Hannum and Hall. But let me tell you the rest of the story, because before Jennifer came on, I was telling you about this giant that had been made and had been treated to look as if it was very, very old, and it was put on display and people were being charged admission. Well, remember I said Hannum purchased this made-up giant, moved it to Syracuse, and was really getting all kinds of people coming out. He had doubled the admission fee, so it was $1 a person, which in those days was really expensive. Barnum, when he found out about this giant, made an offer, but he was turned down. So he didn't want to be outdone. And what Barnum did, he had a duplicate giant carved, which he exhibited, claiming that Hannum had sold the original to him and had replaced it with a fake. Ah, yes, P.T. Barnum was known as being a master with PR. So the newspapers went berserk. They picked up Barnum's version, and crowds started coming to see his giant. After all, it was bigger than the other one. Well, Hannum was the one who was quoted as saying, "There's a sucker born every minute." Assuming his giant was real and thousands paying to see Barnum's fake were being ripped off. Now, Hannum tried to sue Barnum for calling his giant a fake. And, of course, when everything went to court, the original hoax was revealed. And the judge ruled for Barnum, finding that Hull's Cardiff giant was a fake, and Barnum was thus not guilty of anything. The sucker quote, however, ended up sticking to P.T. Barnum, and the other people involved not remembered at all. Fascinating stuff, how myths evolve and how things happen. Just amazing. In today's world, because of the Internet, we have the opportunity to do a lot of research, but we have to be willing to ask questions. Where are the sources coming from? How can we verify these sources? Are they reliable? There is so much out there in the world, and I have to say, I really think it's more abundant than ever before. We just don't know. You think you've got all your information, but you have to start checking your resources. And many times you find that people will have passed along information that has not been verified at all. You know, there's the old game that kids play. It used to be done in the Scouts where they would, you'd tell a person a story, and then they would tell that story to someone else. And it was told again and again and again within a circle of people. Let's say you had 20 people. By the time the 20th person repeated what had been said to them, it had been changed dramatically. Why? Because it's natural with a human being. We like to embellish things, so we don't hear things clearly. So checking out facts is really important. And it's something, it's an ongoing process. I wish I could say that it's not, but it is. Now, I wanted to share with you today something about natural pain relief. And this is a story about a delightful woman. Her name is Barbara Beasley. And she's a very slender lady. And she had terrible, terrible back problems. And she was, well, she just turned 50, and she didn't feel like 50 was any big deal. However, she had pain in her back that was so intense, she could barely move. Well, having gone through the experience of knowing a number of different people with different back issues, man, that can wipe you out. You can end up on the floor not being able to move. I've known people that couldn't move for days, it seemed like. And if they did, it was just excruciatingly painful for them. And a lot of it had to do with muscles that were in spasm. Well, Barbara got to be in such bad shape with her back that they ended up having to call one day paramedics when she was at work. Well, they had to get her to the hospital because she was incapacitated. She just could not function. She could barely move. She was in excruciating pain. And so she was x-rayed and examined, and the doctor said that she was developing arthritis in her back. Two of her vertebrae had managed to fuse together, and she had also developed excruciatingly severe muscle sprains in her lower back. What did they do? They put her into a body cast for 6 weeks so that they could keep her back into a certain positioning and allow the muscles to relax and to heal. Well, what would you do if you were in that situation and your doctor said, you're going to have to make some changes in your life because obviously what you're doing is creating more problems than you possibly can handle physically? What would you do if your doctor made that comment to you? Well, I know we're getting ready to go on break, so when we come back from break, I'll finish the rest of Barbara's story because I think that what Barbara went through is worth hearing about because it can make a difference with us as to how we take care of ourselves and that we can empower ourselves by being aware and becoming informed. So we'll be coming back in just a moment. Again, I'll be finishing up the story with Barbara Beasley. And, of course, the telephone lines are open if you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756. When we come back, we'll find out how Barbara has been able to resolve this life-changing physical affliction. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497.
1-800-259-7. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Don't forget, you can give me a call if you like, 888-815-9756. Barbara Beasley is in excruciating pain, in a body cast. This woman is absolutely miserable. What does she do? What would you do? Do you have some close friends? Would you talk to some friends? Tell people what you're going through? When you have something like that happen, people usually are very thoughtful. They want to know if they can help you, etc. Well, Barbara was just absolutely devastated with this situation, as I'm sure I would have been, too, because every morning she would have a run, you know, she'd go out there. She was thinking she was doing a good job for herself. She was out doing her running. She loved horseback riding. And she did volunteer work to work with SEALs and things like this, and she couldn't do any of this. She was immobilized for 6 weeks. Well, I probably would have not been a happy camper if I'd been in Barbara Beasley's situation and would have maybe gone through a pity party special. What about you? How do you think you would have felt? However, what goes on in the mind more than anything else is a sense of helplessness. What options do you have? Well, as it turned out, a friend said, I've got this book. Can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. It's titled 8 Steps to a Pain-Free Back. And the author's name was Esther Gockhill. And so Esther said, what else am I going to do? So she reads the book, and she finds in reading the book that Esther had had such severe back pain that she ended up going through surgery. However, the problems were not fixed with the surgery until Esther learned how to correct her posture. And Barbara thought, posture? What does that have to do with a back problem? Well, as it turned out, as soon as she was able to get out of the body cast, etc., she thought she would get in touch with this woman because she so loved the book and the information that Esther had shared. So when Barbara met with her, Esther chatted with her and said that she had traveled around the world and had been in places like Portugal and fishing villages in Brazil. And she said these people had wonderful posture. And Esther was a very observant woman. She said no matter how much manual labor these people did, they didn't have sophisticated technology. They had to do a lot of stuff the old-fashioned way. And she said, you know, they have 10 times less problems with back pain than we do in our sophisticated society. Well, Barbara was fascinated with what Esther was showing her. Now, Esther said, Barbara, I want you to look at the photographs. I want you to look at how these people are standing and notice how their shoulders are aligned towards the back of their torsos. Their shoulders don't stoop forward. Now, stop and think about it. How many times when you're sitting at the computer, I know it happens with me, you find you're sort of slumping, your back is in a curve, and you're looking at the screen, or your head's up, and you're looking at the screen, your head's bent back, your shoulders are sort of curled forward. Posture's terrible on computers. You're slouching. It's awful what we do to ourselves. So she had Barbara stand before a mirror, and she used a particular picture guide that she had developed. And she helped Barbara identify problems with her posture. And she said, you're holding your body wrong, you're tilting your pelvis backward, you're putting pressure on your lower back and walking on the front of your feet. instead of your heel. So what Esther did was coach Barbara, encouraging her to tilt her pelvis forward, push shoulders back, and guess what? Barbara, even while she was going through these exercises with Esther, started feeling better. And she said another thing she noticed, she looked slimmer. She said, I just looked better, but more importantly, I was feeling better. So she started doing, when she got home after meeting with Esther and having a counseling session with her, she started doing some of the simple exercises. And she said she began to pay attention to how she positioned herself. She was mindful of her body and how it was feeling. And she said it was so easy to get sloppy. But whenever she'd get this pain or a twinge, she'd go, wait a minute, what am I doing? So she was again being mindful. And she'd remember to bend her knees a little bit when she was standing. She just did little things. And do you know what? Everything that Esther encouraged Barbara to do eventually became just second nature to Barbara. And she said, today I have no problems with my back. I go through meetings without having muscle spasms. And I'm able to ride my horses. I'm able to go running. And she said, I just wish I had learned to do the right thing with posture so long ago. I wouldn't have had to go through this trauma. But because of what she's gone through, she's been able to share the information so that I can share it with you. Posture is so important. You know, there was a time, girls, not boys, but girls had to balance books on the top of their head. Yep, books. And usually they'd find the biggest and heaviest book they could put on your head. But you had to pay attention. So your shoulders had to be back. You couldn't slouch, because if you did, the book would slide off. You had to learn to keep your head up and level so that the book would stay balanced. You had to keep your shoulders back. People in dancing learn about posture. You've heard Teresa Tapp on the show talking about posture. All of these things make a difference, and it's that alignment. It's that core alignment with the body that keeps your back healthy and strong. And, of course, they know you know about exercise. Exercise keeps your bones strong and healthy, and it's so important for women to pay attention to that, working with weights. Nutrition is especially important, but you've got to move your body. And so many people have become so sedentary, or if you're sitting at the office all the time, if you're like me and you're sitting sometimes for hours in front of a computer, you get very weary. Well, it's important to set a little timer so that when you're sitting for long periods of time, even if you're in an office cubicle at a job, be aware, set a little timer of some kind, that you know, okay, I've got to get up and I've got to stretch about every hour. Go to the restroom, bend over, touch your toes, stand up, roll your shoulders back. Do those shoulders roll. Just stretch. And just do some exercises that take maybe a minute or so. It is amazing what it will do for your back and for your muscles. I think sort of hanging over from the waist down and just pretending like you're a limp rag doll and just sort of moving your arms and your shoulders and your neck and your head and just gradually bringing yourself up and then bringing those shoulders back, it does wonders for you. And you won't have the problems in your muscles. So I wanted to share that information with you, because so many times we have problems that occur with ourselves physically, because we get so engrossed in being busy that we don't give the attention to ourselves as we should. So keep that in mind. A good posture can make a great deal of difference in how you feel. And Barbara never did have to go through that back surgery. So, you know, an ounce of prevention prevents a lot of pounds of cure of pain and suffering that you don't want to have to go through if it's necessary at all. You just don't want to do it. Well, my goodness, we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There's no one else like you on this planet. And aren't you glad? Because you have a chance to make your own legacy in the right way, the just your special thing, whatever it may be. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be talking about the happiness genes right here with Dr. Richard Baird. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent time wherever you are. See you right back here on BBS Radio, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.